It's Wednesday, March 6th. It's a one-on-one race, and I'm not talking about the race with Nikki Haley. We start here. In a dominant Super Tuesday performance, Donald Trump all but seals the Republican nomination.
They call it Super Tuesday for a reason.
What 15 states could tell us about a general election rematch? Being late on your credit card payments could be a little less painful.
This move to cut those late fees could save families $10 billion annually.
New rules from the federal government are being blasted by credit companies. And a school shooter's mother was convicted. Now the father could be too.
This trial is going to be more about gun safety and what parents who own weapons are responsible for.
Could this set an even broader precedent for American families? From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. We usually see Super Tuesday as a defining moment for the primaries, the beginning of the final chapter as we head towards conventions. But let's be honest, last night felt like the end of the story. Forget that, it felt like we were dusting off the book, putting it up on the shelf, and grabbing a new one titled General Election.
Maine looking like it is an absolute blowout, a 45, maybe 50-point win there, and even Massachusetts.
The Republican contest between Donald Trump and Nikki Haley was already lopsided. Well, the margins last night in several of these states was not even close. Mathematically, Trump has not yet clinched the nomination, but in every other sense, it's over. Meanwhile, President Joe Biden's got a choice. See, some incumbent presidents try to run above the fray. They don't mention their opponents. Maybe they just stand in the Rose Garden behind the presidential seal and say, "Judge me on my record. Forget the other guys." Then there are those who really go after their challenger. We are hearing from Biden's team that he plans to do the latter. And now, for 8 months, it is effectively general election time, and the entire playbook is available to each of these candidates. We are on a march to November, and ABC's national correspondent Stephen Portnoy is here to start us off. Stephen, can you just take me on a whip around to the country real quick? How dominant was Donald Trump last night?
Yeah, good morning, Brad. It was nearly a romp for Trump. He won almost everywhere except Vermont, where Nikki Haley eked out a narrow victory, her second in this contest so far. She won Washington, D.C.'s Republican primary last weekend, and now she wins a second contest in Vermont. But other than that, across the country, it was Donald Trump's night. His domination over the party is so apparent now. He hasn't quite clinched the nomination, but he's just on the cusp of it. His campaign believes he'll be able to do it as early as next week.
They call it Super Tuesday for a reason. This is a big one.
And he basked in his overwhelming victories at his Mar-a-Lago event last night.
What were Trump's strengths and what were his weaknesses, I guess? You're a student of the exit polls, Stephen. That's what I love about you. What are the exit polls telling us from last night?
Well, there were three states where we did exit polling. One state was California, the largest state in the country. And it illustrated how in a closed primary such as California, Donald Trump did so well.
I know Trump has a way of speaking that a lot of people don't like. Don't invite him to your Christmas dinner. But policy-wise, I feel that the country was in a better direction.
In North Carolina, also a closed primary, illustrated his strengths. But I found the results of our Virginia exit poll striking because that was an open primary. And more than a third of those who voted in the GOP primary in Virginia yesterday told us they were self-described moderates or liberals. So it much more reflected, to a degree, a general election electorate.
I voted for Nikki Haley because I'm not really a fan of Trump and not really a fan of Biden either.
More than a third of the Virginia primary voters said that they would be dissatisfied if Donald Trump becomes the GOP nominee. And among people who voted for Nikki Haley yesterday, 86% of them said they'd be dissatisfied if Donald Trump becomes the nominee. So you have to ask yourself, and certainly the Trump campaign will be asking itself, and maybe the Biden campaign too, what of those Haley voters who took part in yesterday's Virginia Republican primary? Where will they go in November? Are they moderates and liberals who will come to the polls in November and vote for Joe Biden? Will they sit out the race in November? Will they revert to Donald Trump and act as Republicans in the fall? We don't know the answer to that. But we did ask whether they would support the Republican nominee in November, no matter who it is. And more than a third of all the Virginia primary voters said they would not necessarily do so. Among Haley voters, it was 68%.
Wow.
And what's striking as you look at the other two states where we have data, North Carolina and California, an equal or greater number of people said that. And in North Carolina, it was 78% of Haley voters in North Carolina refused to say that they would support Donald Trump in November or whoever the nominee is in November, no matter what.
That's interesting, David. It's almost as if, like, if we were talking about Donald Trump as a candidate, we'd say, wow, he blew everyone away. If we were talking about him as an incumbent, you go, wow, like, there are serious problems here for him.
Well, especially as we assess the road ahead for Donald Trump in the courts. 40% of the voters in Virginia's Republican primary said that if Donald Trump were convicted of a crime, he would not be fit to be president. That's pretty close to half of the Republican voters in Virginia. And among those who voted for Nikki Haley yesterday, 87% said that if Donald Trump were convicted of a crime, he would not be fit to be president. What will those voters do in November if Donald Trump is convicted?
Well, I guess, which makes the decision from the Supreme Court to hear this immunity case that we talked about yesterday, and that kind of actually delays all of these trials from getting underway on the federal level, makes that so significant. But let's talk about Haley for a second. Stephen, where does she go from here? Because I would have totally assumed she would come out last night and go, hey, guys, we gave it our all. We stuck around through almost half the states and we didn't win. That's fine, but I don't want to spend any more donor money on flying me around the country. That didn't happen, though, last night. Like, what is her next move?
I'm not sure. Everyone in political journalism has been asking the same question. What is going to happen next with the Haley campaign?
The media has been like all over themselves trying to figure out why I'm not getting out of this race. Why does she keep fighting? What's she doing? Well, first of all, when 70% of Americans say they don't want Donald Trump or Joe Biden, yes, I'm going to keep on fighting.
She has said that she will stay in this race as long as she is competitive. Perhaps the results in Vermont are the best example of her truly remaining competitive. But as you look at the contests ahead in Georgia, Mississippi, Washington State next week, you really have to wonder how she's going to be able to perform as strongly as she did in Vermont last night.
I would vote for that microphone as opposed to voting for President Trump.
I did switch parties. Some people might be surprised at me, but it's harm reduction at this point.
I wish there were more people, honestly, on both sides to give us a better choice.
But I got to tell you, Brad, as we talk to voters, there is just a sense of exhaustion and malaise, really, when it comes to this matchup that's being shaped so far this fall.
Right. And that sense of malaise, Stephen, that expands to not just Haley being a non-factor. Also, you had the Arizona Senator Kyrsten Sinema yesterday. Perhaps the biggest surprise of yesterday was Kyrsten Sinema says she's not running for re-election in November. She's an independent. Like, she has been courting independent, moderate votes throughout Arizona for years now. Clearly, she didn't think she could win. And you wonder if the voter base in all of these states has become so polarized over Trump, over Biden, that there's no one being like, hey, I'm not like Trump or like Biden. Get excited about me. And everyone's like, we're done being excited. Really interesting data points, despite kind of the lack of drama from last night. Stephen Portnoy in Washington, thank you.
Hey, you bet.
Next up on Start Here, if you could choose your political opponent, credit card companies wouldn't be a terrible choice. We're back in a bit.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Built the cartridge.
What were you thinking at that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.
So if this is now a Trump-Biden matchup, look at this through President Biden's eyes. He was blamed for a slowing economy. Well, now it's rebounding, but polls show he's not getting a ton of credit for it. He's been skewered for his age and meandering speaking style. Well, few people speak in more scattered sentences than the 77-year-old Trump. So if you're Biden, What do you do to get voters on your side? Well, a key theme of his presidency thus far has been eliminating so-called junk fees.
No matter how much money you make, no matter how rich or poor or middle class you are, you don't like being taken advantage of.
And yesterday, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which he's championed, announced a new policy that could affect your credit card bill. ABC's Elizabeth Schulze covers the economy. Elizabeth, what is the new rule?
Right. So this is a rule from the CFPB that basically will cut the typical credit card fee that you would pay if you're late on your statement from $32 to $8. This has been in the works for a couple of years. And the CFPB director, Rohit Chopra, said the point of this rulemaking process is to close a loophole in a federal law that allows credit card companies and big banks to keep charging customers more and more if they were late on their payments.
This work is critical, especially as some of the biggest players in so many industries are looking to get even bigger and gain more power to corner the market.
The goal of this policy is to make it so that there's a cap of $8 for how much banks can charge, and banks can't continue to increase those fees based on inflation. It would try to rein in what the CFPB says is a big source of income for a handful of mega banks and try to ease some of the financial burden on families who might be behind when it comes to their credit card statements.
Yeah, I'm almost trying to figure out who this is a bigger deal to. Like, are there that many consumers out there that are running into these problems where, you know, this is really hitting their wallet, it's affecting their lives? And if it's a huge deal, I guess that actually would affect the bottom line of these credit card companies, right? But is it a big chunk of the income for these credit card companies? There's that many people that are late?
Yeah, well, and the answer to your question, Brad, depends on who you ask, right? I mean, there are 45 million people, according to the CFPB, who are charged late fees every single year. So it estimates that this move to cut those late fees could save families $10 billion annually. I mean, they're saying that's a savings of $220 per year per family. So for those people who are consistently late, this kind of a change could be a big deal. On the other hand, you have the credit card issuers and the big banks who say this is a huge deal for them. They say this is the government overstepping. This is a source of revenue that they do need. And they need this because if those people aren't making good on their obligations, they can't just take a hit. What these companies are saying in response is they might have to actually raise interest rates on consumers, charge consumers more for other stuff in order to make up for that lost revenue. So there was immediate pushback from some of the big trade groups that represent banks and credit card issuers, saying that this isn't really a win for consumers. They argue that actually not that many people are affected by this. But of course, for those people who are late, who do have those fees charged frequently, they would see this as a win.
Wait, and so does it kind of mean somebody can spread out their payments more? Like, if you can eat the $8, essentially, no need to worry anymore about being a day or two late on your credit card bills. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, and that's sort of one of the arguments that the trade groups will make, right, is that this incentivizes behavior from consumers to basically not make their payments on time, to be late, not worry about it because the charge is lower than it was, and that can then snowball, that people end up taking on more debt. And it is important to remember, Brad, that this is coming at a time when credit card debt is at a record high, $1.1 trillion. People are taking on more debt overall. Part of that is because prices have gone up. Part of that is because people are just using their cards more for day-to-day expenses. I've asked administration officials if they expect this rule will be challenged. They said they're hopeful that it will continue to move forward and go into effect in mid-May. That's the plan as of now. So for people who are looking at this and saying, what does it mean for me? You might see that your payment goes down, but it is, of course, always important to remember that if you're not paying your credit card bill or if you're only even just making minimum payments, that can hurt your credit score. You can also have interest snowball. So it's not like this is just an answer to not pay off your credit card debt and go into deeper financial trouble for people who might be seeing this as at least a little bit of relief for now.
And like you said, a lot of this sort of revolves around people who are kind of chronically late for one reason or another. So big difference for them in the short term. But in the long term, lots of Americans like see these little things nibble at their budgets all the time. All right. Elizabeth Schulze, thank you.
Thanks so much, Brad.
You remember the case of Jennifer Crumbly, the mother of a school shooter in Michigan?
I don't want to say that I'm a victim because I do not want to disrespect those families that truly are the victims on this. But we did lose a lot.
Last month, in a first-of-its-kind verdict, she was found guilty of involuntary manslaughter, the first time an American parent has ever really been held criminally responsible for their child's mass shooting. Well, yesterday, proceedings began in another trial, the shooter's father, ABC's Trevor Ault has been covering both of these proceedings. Trevor, so this is a separate trial, right? What's happening in this case?
Yeah, so these parents were tried separately because of the fact that there were going to be some different witnesses based on the husband or the wife. So James Crumbly now on his own trial, they're going through the process of sitting the jury. This is yet another trial, the same four charges, the same prosecutors, the same judge, but it will be, Brad, a different jury, which means you could certainly get a different result. And there's going to be a lot of new evidence introduced against James that was not introduced against Jennifer. I think we're going to hear a lot of the same arguments from the prosecution's sake, given the fact that their arguments against Jennifer Crumbly were already successful. And just to give people a reminder,
he shot and killed four students and injured seven others at Oxford High School in Michigan back in 2021.
The parents bought the weapon for their son that he used in the shooting. The prosecution says they ignored a whole bunch of red flags about his mental health.
And you don't deny that you never once took him to see a therapist or counselor?
No, I did not.
You did not.
That Jennifer Crumbly laughed off the fact he'd been caught searching ammunition in class, that the parents were called in the morning of the shooting. They were shown his disturbing drawings where he had drawn that gun that they had bought for him, that he wrote, "The thoughts won't stop, help me," and blood everywhere.
So you said yesterday it was a little concerning, yet you told your husband, "Emergency" in all caps.
Correct. That's why I left to go to the school and I texted him.
And he wrote back, "My God, WTF."
Correct.
They didn't tell the school that they'd bought the gun for him. They declined to take him home. Of course, now we know at least one jury found Jennifer Crumbly was so grossly negligent that she deserved to be held responsible for the shooting. It's possible that we could have the first father of a school shooter held criminally responsible for his son's shooting, but it wouldn't necessarily be historic, the first parent, because his wife has already been convicted, Brad.
Right. And so, I mean, why the different, you said there's different evidence. I mean, what are the key differences in this case versus the mother?
I think this trial is going to be more about gun safety and what parents who own weapons are responsible for, as opposed to what a parent owes to their child in society if there are warnings about their deteriorating mental health.
You weren't with them when they bought the gun, correct?
No, I was not.
Okay.
In Jennifer Crumbly's trial, she took the stand and she tried to pin at least some of the gun security on her husband. She said it was her husband's job to secure that weapon that their son used in the shooting.
I just didn't feel comfortable being in charge of that. It was more his thing, so I let him handle that. I didn't feel comfortable putting the lock thing on it.
That's obviously going to be brought up by the prosecution. At the same time, though, we know, having spoken with at least some members of the jury in Jennifer Crumbly's case, that one of the key pieces of evidence was that Jennifer Crumbly was the last adult to have handled that weapon before the shooting.
You were with him at the range on November the 27th.
Correct.
You saw your son shoot the weapon.
Correct.
You saw him shoot the last practice round before the shooting on November 30th.
At the range?
Yeah.
Yes, correct.
So Jennifer Crumbly, in her conviction, a lot of it was about ignoring those red flags for mental health and the warnings from the school repeatedly. James Crumbly didn't hear of or see all of those warnings that Jennifer Crumbly did, because often their son would text Jennifer rather than James. And we also don't know if he's going to take the stand like his wife did. That was a pretty embarrassing stretch for her. Number one, a bunch of her affairs were revealed in front of the jury, and she also might not have won them over because she testified quite controversially.
I've asked myself if I would have done anything differently, and I wouldn't have.
You might argue that James Crumbly is going to try to take a different tack if he takes the stand at all. But I think what's going to happen is instead the prosecution is going to hammer him on gun safety, because he was the one, Brad, who took his son on Black Friday and bought him that gun that he used just days later in the shooting. So while there is a lot of overlap between James and Jennifer Crumbly, certainly the same child, there are some pretty key differences that are going to be laid out by both the prosecution and the defense here, and it could definitely be a wider precedent for how we hold parents responsible if we do criminally in the wake of all these school shootings.
Right. And then I guess if he's found not guilty, that adds its own kind of confusion to, like, what is the precedent? What is the legacy of these two different trials happening one after the other? Trevor Ault, covering them both. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brad.
Okay, one more quick break. When we come back, talk about teamwork. College basketball players are unionizing. One last thing is next. And one last thing. There are lots of unions. Truck drivers, teachers, even video game programmers. There's a union for everyone. Well, yesterday, a new group of Americans voted to form a union of their own. College basketball players.
All 15 members, the final vote result, 13-2 in favor of joining that union.
Members of the men's basketball team at Dartmouth University held a vote to become card-carrying union members. To which you might be saying, wait, do college basketball players even get paid? How can you be in a union if it's technically not even a job on campus? Well, this is the latest twist in the road for college sports.
Justice Brett Kavanaugh writing on the decision, quote, the NCAA's business model would be flatly illegal in almost any other industry in America.
A few years ago, in the wake of a Supreme Court ruling questioning the NCAA's monopoly, a new policy allowed student athletes to collect fees from companies using their name, image, and likeness. In December, the NCAA proposed another idea, new sports divisions in which some athletes can be paid a salary. This would not apply to schools like Dartmouth, which, compared to a lot of other universities, don't have huge sports budgets. They don't even offer basketball scholarships, which is why Dartmouth said this very idea was ridiculous. The school tried to delay this union vote, but was denied. And this is the argument that could spell trouble for other colleges. An official with the National Labor Relations Board, they got the weight of the government on their side, said, no, these students don't get paid. No, Dartmouth doesn't make millions off their backs the way some big football programs might. But at the end of the day, they got bosses. Their coaches have extraordinary power over their schedules, their conduct. You're expected to take classes that don't conflict with practice. Press conferences are mandatory. You show up late to a practice, you better believe you can get fired. So how is that not a job? This is why some legal experts say colleges might have to start treating their athletes like employees or give back all this control. The NCAA says it welcomes colleges providing more benefits, but that calling students employees will hurt them more than help them. The Dartmouth players seem to disagree, and now they've got the right to start bargaining. Look out, negotiators. They're Ivy League educated, and they know their X's and O's. And much more on all the Super Tuesday results, including the down ballot races, all that data, all that analysis on abcnews.com and the ABC News app. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt cartridge.
What were you thinking at that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.